Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, what's up? It's Nolan from Past Gas by Donut Media. We are an automotive history show. This week, we're talking the life story of Gilles Villeneuve, Canada's most important Formula One driver. This guy is a national hero up there and truly one of the greats, taken from us too soon. He started out racing snowmobiles when he was a teenager. He invented one of the most important snowmobile innovations ever, which is crazy for a Formula One driver to do, and eventually became just one of the most legendary drivers of the 1970s. This guy raced for such a short time, but had such a large impact, and it was super cool to talk about a Quebecois racing legend. That's Past Gas by Donut Media, available anywhere you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Number one automotive podcast, Past Gas.
At over 3 million square miles, the Sahara is the largest desert in the world. About a quarter of that area is covered in sand dunes as high as 1,000 feet, and the rest is just as inhospitable. Barren, gravel-covered plains, rocky mountains, and plateaus that jut up out of nowhere. Average daily highs of 100 degrees Fahrenheit and overnight lows that plunge below freezing. It's in this extreme environment that motorcycle racer Terry Sabine found himself lost in January of 1977. The Frenchman was competing in the Abidjan-Nice Rally, a race that began in the capital of the Ivory Coast and its finish line in the French Riviera. But Sabine had strayed far from the route, stranded somewhere in the Libyan desert, a world away from the Mediterranean climate of Nice. Without any water and food, Sabine sucked on small stones to keep his mouth moist and waited for rescue. After three long days, Sabine was airlifted out of the race by the race organizer. But the ordeal had changed Sabine. On his return trip to France, an idea began to crystallize in his mind. One rally to rule them all. How did Terry Sabine's near-death experience lead to the most infamous off-road race in the world? What about the endurance rallies' extreme risk attracted drivers, adventurers, and even celebrities eager to cheat death? And why, after many years, many deaths, a couple continents later, does the race continue to be a challenge for those who go and a dream for those who stay behind? Today on Past Gas, it's the history of the Paris-Dakar Rally.
Past Gas Podcast, it's about cars, it's not about ports.
Dude, a challenge for those who go and a dream for those to stay behind is a quote, ladies and gentlemen. Good. That's sick.
That's poetic.
That's poetic. A-up. Dude, again, race car drivers say the coolest stuff. It's because they're close to God.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm really craving some stones to suck on.
Oh, right? Yeah. Sucking on them. Sucking on some stones. Chili stones.
To keep my mouth moist.
Sucking on chili stones to keep my mouth moist. Little Diddy, about Jack and Diane. Our young audience is going to love this. But the other day I was thinking about John Cougar Mellencamp. Is that, that's, he wrote, he's saying that.
No, I think it's John Cougar Concentration Camp.
John,
is who's saying that. That's a punk band, by the way. I didn't make that joke up.
Yeah. That song is the Mellencamp version of like Bruce Springsteen's The River.
I always thought it was Bruce Springsteen singing.
I thought so too. It's not. I didn't want to interject.
The Bruce Springsteen version of like Teenage Love is like, and for my 18th birthday, I got a union card and a wedding coat.
She was 14. Yeah. I mean, that's what, like, High on Fire or something. What's that song?
Oh, I'm on fire.
I'm on Fire is, like, kind of predatory.
Is
it? Listen to it, yeah. Hey, Little Girl, Is Your Daddy Home?
Hey, Little Girl, Is Your Daddy Home? I'm on fire. Please call.
Also 14.
Please call 911. Oh, I'm on fire.
It's wildfire.
No, it's I'm on fire.
I'm on fire.
Oh, wild. Speaking of fire,
yeah,
guys,
we're
all wearing
stuff.
The same shirt today.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
How'd that
After
happen?
Nearly 4 years on the air, Passgas finally has merch.
Right. It's right here. Wink, wink, nation.
Donut has had a pretty boom in merchandise operation for the last few years.
Let me inspect this.
We are now excited to offer for the very first time Passgas shirts.
Yes. For the listener that can't see the shirt, it's a Wink, wink, nation shirt with a...
we'll say roadster.
Japanese roadster on
it's
it.
Not allowed to be a Mazda Miata.
Don't say it.
I didn't say it was. I said it's not allowed
don't
to
stop
be.
Stop saying don't the even. Name.
All I'm saying is it's not allowed to be one.
And then it says Wink Wink Nation in the style of kind of like a Volkswagen ad, Porsche ad maybe?
Yeah, but it's not.
It's not a European sports car ad in the style of that. It's got some more text down below.
It's really cool shirt. I really like it a lot.
It's really cool.
And then we also have...
It's got a poster of the same design.
You can get it as a poster.
You can get it as a poster. We've got a bunch of stickers as well. James,
I'll
let you read those off.
Sticker pack. KCAR 109.5, The Car.
Our fictional radio station.
Fictional radio station that this podcast airs on. We got an exclusive to this Drop Donut OG logo sticker, which I really like. It's kind of like... wild.
It's like
drawn.
A little
is
3D.
It?
It's a little. Oh. It's like got a nice drop shadow, it's but like it's a little more hand drawn.
It's like hand drawn looking.
Yeah,
that's
and
cool.
Then a Wink Wink Nation sticker, same design as the shirt and the poster. Another KCAR Globe sticker, and then my favorite one of the pack, Pass Gas or Cash. Nobody rides for
that's
free.
Pretty good.
Nice,
pretty,
I love that.
Pretty good. So if you want to show everybody your support or that you are a fan of Pass Gas, and you want to do it in a way that makes you and or your car or your bedroom wall look cool, then go to donutmedia.com, pick yourself up some. Mm-hmm. If these sell good, then we'll make more and more. Maybe... there's a Give Me Back My Son shirt down the road. Or maybe there's a Keep It Juiced mug in the works.
You also had like some sort of opposing faction to Wink Wink Nation that I can't remember. Blink Blink Army.
Blink Blink Army. Also, this is an episode that you guys have been requesting for a very long time.
I can't
believe
we haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
I thought for sure we had, but maybe it's because we've mentioned it a lot in other episodes maybe. Uh-huh. But I'm actually really excited to talk about this.
We did the Camel Challenge.
Camel Challenge.
We did Dakar, maybe up to speed.
We've done a ton of videos on Dakar.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've done a lot of Dakar videos.
Dakar videos. Maybe it wasn't up to speed.
Almost every podcast has been about Dakar.
Dakar.
Some license plates, some about Dakar.
Yeah, some Dakar, some to trucks.
The truck rally.
Buy the merch. Wink, wink, nation. Rise up.
Let's get into the story.
DonutMedia.com.
All right, so... this story starts with one man, Terry Sabine. Sabine was suborned on June 13th, 1949, to a wealthy family in an affluent city just west of Paris, France. His father, Gilbert, was a dentist, and his mother, Andrea, was a Parisian antiques dealer.
Oh, see, a Parisian antiques dealer is much different than most other antiques dealers. Like,
it's like 600 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Parisian antiques is like antiquities. Yeah.
They're like, this is the guillotine.
This is the
killed
Marie Antoinette. Yeah.
Jerry's friend did not know what a guillotine was and was like, BS. If you ask five people in your office what a guillotine is, they're not going to know what it is. And literally everyone knew.
It's those really
what it
red
was.
Cherries that you put in Shirley Temple.
Terry's interest in racing likely stemmed from his father, who participated in international rallies during Terry's childhood in the 1950s. I would concur. That would probably be passed down. Once Terry began racing himself, his father would even join him as a co-driver. Oh, isn't that nice?
That is cute.
Terry, for his part, was a pretty successful driver. In the 9 years following 1969, he racked up 30 national wins, including the 1974 GT French Championship. He competed 3 times in the 24 Hours of Le Mans from 75 to 77, with his best finish in 13th place in 76, where he drove a Porsche Carrera RSR. But racing wasn't enough for Terry, so in 1975, he put together his first race. As a marketing and advertising major, Terry had been working as a press officer for Lituquet, a small beach community in northern France. The winter months were pretty dead in the tourist town, so Terry got creative and decided to organize a motorcycle race on the beach. That sounds sick. Like Race of Gentlemen style. The race was called Enduro du Touquet, now known as Enduro Palais du Touquet. The race still occurs over 3 days every February on France's Opal Coast, but this was just a stepping stone for what Terry would do next.
During the 1977 Abidjan-Nice rally we talked about in the opening, when Terry was rescued by helicopter from an almost certain death, the air crew reportedly told him,
from now on, start your new life.
They meant that could be taken in a nice way or a mean way, depending on the tone. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be like,
from now on, start your new life.
Or like, from now on,
start your new life.
I bet the best. Terry agreed and later wrote,
"The desert deeply marked me and developed in me a very particular instinct and sensitivity, and above all, insurmountable desires to return. But since then, never again alone."
There's something magical about the desert.
Oh, yeah. It's a sea of sand.
That's great.
Oh, and it changes a lot. Yeah.
We should go out to Palm Desert sometime.
We should. When we were...
do some peyote. Yeah.
I was in southern Utah with Matt's Off-Road Recovery, and we were on the dunes, and we were just parked there, and there's wind going, and he was like, if you left this car here for 2 days and you came back, it would be gone.
That's crazy.
Like, just in a park. I was like, literally a park. We could see the road from where we were. And he's like, yeah, look under the thing, like under the tires. Mm-hmm. He's like, you can already see it. It's starting to just like eat the car.
It's like quicksand or?
No, it's just because the way wind works, if it's windy, it'll go like all around the car.
And buries it.
So it'll blow everything around the car. And it can't blow the car, so it just blows all the sand away from the car.
Yeah, I can't blow a car for sure.
No, I can't blow a car.
Yeah.
Can you?
I can blow a car, Greg. Can you milk me?
Can you blow the car? You can blow the car by losing it.
You can blow the car. Yeah, if you cold pull, you can blow the car. Mm-hmm. Too much boost, you blow the car.
Yeah. If you lose the race.
You blow the car.
The car.
The car. Yeah, you blow the car.
Blow the car.
Terry wanted to bring the masses to race through the Sahara, where they could test their vehicles as well as themselves.
Mm.
He immediately sprung into action to make his dream a reality. In less than a year, Terry secured funding for the race by bringing on a company that made fruit juice beverages called Oasis.
Ooh.
Perfect.
Tastes great.
Wish you would step back from that.
That's not Oasis.
That is Third Eye Blind.
That's Third Eye Blind.
I don't want to be.
No, that's Third Eye Blind. But that's the wrong lyrics to the same song you're singing. Team you're passing down the hall, faster than a cannonball. Mm-hmm. Where were you while
sucking
we
down
were
chili dogs?
Oasis. Thus, the first Paris-Dakar rally was called the Oasis Rally and began September 26, 1978, in Paris's Place du Trocadéro. From there, competitors would make their first stop in Marseille, where they caught a boat to Algeria. Then they'd continue through Algeria, Niger, Mali, and Upper Volta, what is now Burkina Faso.
Upper Volta is a really cool name.
Mars Volta.
They make some crazy music over there.
Dude, I love Mars Volta.
Yeah.
and Upper Volta, which is now known as Burkina Faso, with the Senegalese capital of Dakar as their final destination on January 14th. Overall, the race was just over 6,000 miles.
Wow, you'd have to take some time off to make that race.
You got to take some more time off than Jeremiah. The initial race, actually, more time off than Christina.
Producer Christina.
Yeah.
Loves her vacation. I'm going to be taking some time off in late summer, though.
I know. Yeah, me too. Yeah. The initial race consisted of 8 stages. These stages ranged in length between roughly 260 miles and 1,473 miles. Once the drivers reached Africa, each individual stage would be hundreds of miles of specials. The quaint name Terry gave to the treacherous off-roading that inspired the race. Rocky terrain with high risk of puncturing a tire, towering dunes hundreds of feet tall, deep sand that made traction impossible, all part of what made a special, special.
You know what's interesting?
What?
The Atlas Mountains in Algeria are the same mountains in the Scottish Highlands and the Appalachians.
No kidding.
Yeah.
They're all part of, they were all together in Pangaea, huh?
And then they're...
And that's now they're, cool.
Now they never talk anymore because they're so far.
They never talk.
Well, they're so busy.
But then they both got banjos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
Something about them mountains make you want to pluck that banjo.
Bang, bang, bang.
I'm freaking Bella Fleck over here. I just want to touch on something that James said in the Paris Dakar rally episode. There are no banjos.
I was like, are there Scottish banjos?
Probably.
Probably like lutes.
The devil kind of, went down to Glasgow.
They're the link because banjos are originated from Africa, but bluegrass music was developed by Scottish and Irish immigrants in the Appalachians, so that's the link.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Cool.
Adding to the difficulty before and after the race portion of each stage was an untimed transit stage that could often add hundreds of miles, which is like we're going from this part of the race to this other part of the race. Company move, if you're in the film industry. Participants would have to travel to base camp from the finish line and travel back again the next morning from the base camp to that day's starting line. What a pain in the ass.
They still do this.
Yeah. Despite being untimed, these additional miles put even more strain on competitors and their machines.
I think it's like, you know, you could argue like, oh, they should just like put the stages closer together. But I think part of the longstanding tradition of this race is that kind of like transit.
It's like you got to drive to the hotel.
Yeah. It's like drag week, you know, where you're going to each one, each track. And this is part of the reliability challenge. Yeah.
Apt comparison.
Thank you.
This meant that even after a grueling day of racing, where racers traveled an average of 550 miles, it could be another couple hours before they'd even reach base camp. And then you got to shower. And then you got to talk to your significant other for, you know,
you gotta
a long time.
Think about what's for dinner because there's no McDonald's around.
No McDonald's around. God forbid they put a McDonald's at Dakar.
No Grimace shake.
Similarly,
is that what Grimace sounds like?
Hey guys, hey little girl,
hey little girl,
drink
I'm on
my,
fire.
Drink my blood.
I'm Grimace. Drink my blood. I'm Grimace. Drink my blood. Can I have fries with that?
It's really
games?
Good if you dip fries in my blood.
Dip your fries in my blood. Do you have any games on your phone? Can I borrow $80?
Do you have an iPhone 4 charger?
Similarly, competitors would have to be up before dawn just to make it to the beginning of the next stage, which began at sunrise.
I would have a tough time at this race. I like sleeping in. I like being in bed.
I'm a grimpily grump before sunrise. Clearly, there's little time for rest. And I was at these base camps that support teams could perform maintenance and repairs, something they would be prohibited from doing during the stages. Any breakdowns, engine trouble, flat tires, anything that occurred during the stage had to be fixed by the racers themselves or with an assist from fellow competitors.
That's so cool, man.
That's sick.
Well, it sucks that you have to do that, but yeah.
I mean, but yeah, it's cool.
It's part of it. It's why it's cool.
What happens on track happens on track.
Buy the ticket, take the ride.
Buy the ticket, take the ride, Greg. However, because very few factory teams participated in those early years, many amateurs acted as their own mechanics, spending the precious hours before dawn working on their vehicles. So you got to race. You got to drive to the camp. You got to fix your own car. You got to worry about dinner because there's no McDonald's. You drink a little Grimace blood. The brutal elements, stringent rules, and epic length of the race meant that few would ever finish. Of the 182 competitors who were at the starting line, only 74 vehicles reached a car.
Ooh.
And the eventual winner almost didn't make it at all. French motorcyclist Cyril Neveu was in the lead with just one day between him and glory when the engine of his Yamaha XT500 blew up. However, with Yamaha being one of the few very well-financed teams in the early days of the race, mechanics were able to replace it overnight. This allowed Neveu to ride to victory the following day, despite not winning a single special. A newcomer at the time, Neveu would become one of the biggest names in the history of Paris-Dakar.
I can't think of Dakar without thinking of Neveu.
You think Dakar, you think Neveu.
It's just crazy to think that this was in the late 70s. You look at the bikes.
Godfather had just come out.
Sure, yeah.
Have you seen Is It Good For Day?
You just like the bikes today, the suspension is so good. The tire technology is advanced. They have like GPS on their handlebars and stuff. They're following waypoints and everything. And I'm just thinking of these old Yamahas that probably weighed a ton, didn't have that much power compared to what's available today. And their suspension, that's what I'm thinking about, is like that is taking such a toll on your body.
Yeah, I feel bad for that, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, and their forearms are probably so sore.
Or yoked.
Yoked, like Popeye.
I want to double the size of my forearms.
Yeah.
How hard is
that?
I want to
double the size of my forearms.
Double just your forearms?
Yeah. Like Popeye style.
Just get like a kettlebell or something or a dumbbell and just do that a lot.
What are you thinking? Like 50-pound kettlebell?
50's a little
that'll
high,
be heavy,
probably.
Dude.
I'm trying to double my arms.
I know. Well, work up to it. Otherwise, you're going to blow those arms out, dude.
Yeah, blow them out. And then we're going to have to lift your arms up like some sort of marionette monster.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with more of this story. But first, a word from our sponsors.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
With its first iteration of success, the Oasis Rally was renamed the Paris-Dakar Rally, often shortened to Paris-Dakar and later just Dakar.
Like my cloud.
For its second running in 1980, factory teams began pouring resources into the race, welcoming big names like BMW, Lada, and Volkswagen. As Neveu sought to defend his title for Yamaha, his biggest challenger emerged riding a BMW 800, one Hubert Auriol.
Aurier.
Aurier was an Ethiopian-born Frenchman nicknamed the African. His father, Jacques Aurier, he worked for the Ethiopian Railway, and his mother, Genevieve de Renaissance de Hauteville, that was his mom. If her lengthy name wasn't a giveaway, guys, she came from nobility. Aurier's roots on the continent meant that the Paris-Dakar rally held a special place in his heart. And with that, he had a determination to beat Naveau. After four stages, Aurier had won three specials, and by halfway through the race, he was the motorcycle leader. However, during a transit stage, Aurier had issues with his gearbox and was forced to catch a ride on a bush taxi, a sort of bus-slash-rideshare mashup thing common in sub-Saharan Africa.
I've ridden a bush taxi before.
While clever, completing part of the race in this local vehicle was grounds for his disqualification. Yeah,
that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, because otherwise everyone would be riding bush taxis.
Remember when Max Verstappen rode a bush taxi at Sebring last year?
Yeah. The 1980 race also allowed for Italian mopeds to have a moment. Despite Paris-Dakar's growing legend and known difficulty, a French team of four led by Jean-François Piot entered on Vespas.
That's sick.
Miraculously, 23 days later, two of the four Vespa riders crossed the finish line in Dakar. Guys, hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button if you want to see us do the Paris-Dakar on Coleman mini bikes.
We could do the Mint 400 on mini Cole bikes.
If they can do it
Mint
on Vespas.
Pretty serious. I want to do it on a Vespa. A Vespa is way different than a mini bike.
How so, though?
Way better seating position. Way more powerful. It's like
a Vespa is
like
more powerful than a Coleman.
There's like 150cc Vespas.
Really?
For sure, yeah. I would much rather ride it.
Okay, if you want to see James do that, go ahead and hit that subscribe button.
There's a reason that you see Vespas everywhere, and you only see Coleman mini bikes in Inglewood.
If I had to do Dakar on a mini bike, I would pick the Madass.
I would put some stubby tires on a Grom. I think I could do it.
You keep talking about Groms, and it's like you just want the danger of a motorcycle, but none of the outlaw coolness that comes with it.
Yeah, well.
How do I be dangerous and still look like a clown?
All right. I feel attacked. the third Paris-Dakar rally in 1981 was the biggest yet. On motorcycle, Hubert Aurier exacted revenge on Cyril Naveau by kicking him in the nuts.
Hell yeah.
And the African won his first Paris-Dakar. But the bigger story was the type of competitors that the race was beginning to attract. You had guys like Jackie Ickx and Claude Brasseur making their Paris-Dakar debut in a Citroën CX. Jackie Ickx was already well-known to the motorsports world. The Belgian Formula One driver had already won the 24 Hours of Le Mans four times and would go on to win two more. And Claude Brasseur? Well, he was a French actor who had also won two Caesars, the French equivalent of an Oscar for Best Actors.
This is the first time we're talking about cars in Dakar.
Did you watch the Césars this year?
I am a César Award winner.
We're having a Césars party, and we're going to get Little Caesars.
Nice. Little Caesars. That's how I cut my pizza.
Un Caesar.
Little Caesars.
Do they call Caesars?
Cut up the little Caesars with the little Caesars.
You can go down to Caesars Petit.
We are watching the Caesars. We got little Caesars. We're going to cut it up with little Caesars.
You know, pub style pizza with the little squares.
Little squares.
No one gets crust.
Similar to the Vespas a year prior, another unique vehicle debuted on the rally. Two wealthy French guys, Jean-Christophe Pelletier and Thierry de Montcorger, teamed up to attack the desert in a Rolls-Royce.
Nice.
The idea began as a joke.
Nice.
Like many donut videos.
Yeah.
Pelletier was tired of the expensive repairs his first-generation Rolls-Royce Corniche had required, and while out for drinks, the two riffed on trashing it in the Paris-Dakar rally instead of pouring more money into it. I'm sure that was the cheaper option. Incredibly, once they sobered up, they still thought this was a good idea. But it wasn't that simple, James.
No, it never is.
To make it through the desert, the Rolls-Royce had to be modified. The Corniche was given a ladder frame chassis and a four-wheel drive system. This is like a truck now.
Yeah.
Its transmission was swapped out in favor of one from a Toyota Land Cruiser, and its engine replaced with a 350 cubic inch Chevy crate engine. And you hear the EG Civic firing up in the background. I don't know if the audience could hear that.
That's a K20, baby.
Yeah. So in addition to that Chevy crate engine, a custom steel frame went up around the chassis, as well as fiberglass body panels that served to keep both the car's weight down and, most importantly, retain that classic Rolls-Royce Corniche
styling. So they didn't want to dump more money into this car that he drove around town, so they completely changed every piece of it.
Yeah.
They just, all they did was like put a new chassis on it.
A new chassis and fiberglass body and a new engine and trans and make it four wheel drive.
Yeah.
Just literally.
It's not like they're putting money into it.
It touched every system of the car.
Yeah. I'm guessing that they probably just took a truck chassis and put that body on top. Because that'd be way simpler than like.
But then they replaced a lot of it with fiberglass.
Yeah. As for the interior, they added bucket seats. They also took the AC out for weight considerations.
Ooh.
And all told, very little remained of the original car except for superficial traces like its windows, bumpers, grill, and classy. I mean, it looks like a Rolls-Royce in a truck.
It does, for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a Rolls-Royce. Keeping with its affluent theme, the team was sponsored by Christian Dior.
That's it.
Hell yeah.
Or more specifically, Dior's new aftershave, Jules.
Yeah, so it says Jules down the side of this mofo. Jeez.
This gave the car its name, which was plastered all over it. Additionally, the well-off Frenchman stayed on brand by bringing champagne and gourmet food to drive the rally with them. That's pretty hilarious. The car held its own, but was disqualified when Pelletier and Desmond Courget fixed the steering system in what was deemed an illegal repair. Despite this, the car finished the race unassisted, an accomplishment in its own right. And I'm going to call, I don't know what kind of repair that was, but honestly, if you can just keep that thing going through the entire race, I feel like they should just let you do
this
it.
This thing rules.
Like, what the heck? Who cares? Too many rules in racing.
Too many rules in racing. If you change the result of a thing after the fact, it's lame 99.9% of the time.
Let the boys race.
That should like never happen.
We talked about that a couple weeks ago on DRS after the Australian Grand Prix, which was a total disaster. Anyway, check that show out. James.
In 1982, the following year, Cyril Nevue returned to glory in the motorcycle class, giving Honda its very first victory.
Oh.
Meanwhile, Hubert Auriol had to withdraw over safety concerns with his BMW. The Ix-Brasseur duo won 7 stages in 1982, en route to a 5th place finish. But the biggest story of Paris-Dakar's 4th edition was being host to an international incident.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I know what this is. Yeah. Mark Thatcher, son of then UK Prime Minister, the Iron Lady herself, Margaret Thatcher, entered the fray driving a Peugeot 504. Brimming with confidence, he told the BBC before the race, "I've now raced in Le Mans and other things. This rally is no problem." But there was a problem. On day 3, he suffered a broken rear axle in Algeria. I just realized his mom is the Prime Minister of Great Britain, and he's driving a French car.
I know. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Which wouldn't have been a huge issue, but racers accidentally misreported the location of his breakdown, and when officials couldn't find him, he was declared missing. This thrust the race in international news with a manhunt that lasted 6 days.
What?
During this time, Mark Thatcher claimed he read the same book over and over to stay busy. That book was Greetings and Ham. Ultimately,
he read it like 400 times.
Yeah.
He started rapping it.
Yeah. Ultimately, he was spotted by an Algerian military aircraft 35 miles off course, which is not that far, but can be very far.
You're right, man. You know? 6 days in the desert like that.
6 days tough. In the desert like that is a daddy home. The Algerian government absorbed much of the cost of the search and rescue, but left 1,784 British pounds to be sorted out by the Brits.
I like saying it, 1.7 thousand
British pounds. Fearing backlash over the use of public funds, the conservative prime minister Thatcher covered the full cost of the remaining bill.
Yeah,
what
that's like
a
one paycheck for her.
Wow.
If that. With the benefit of hindsight, Mark Thatcher wrote in 2004 that he did absolutely no preparation for the Paris Dakar. Surprising nobody.
That's not a surprise at all.
Yeah. My mommy will figure this out.
I'm a little gent. I can figure it out.
I wish I was a Nepo baby. For sure. I would be just so great at being wealthy. You know?
Mm-hmm. What would you do?
I would have killed people by now. Oh. For sure. Mm. Definitely.
Who?
At a party. Some rando.
Yeah.
Some poor kid at a party. at like a festival.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like at Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
I would have had like a big mansion house for Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
Because I'd probably be into fish.
I'm so happy you're not super rich then.
Why?
Because I could have been offed.
Oh, yeah. You would have been up there. We've been friends for long enough. I mean, I wouldn't have killed you on purpose. I would have, like, wrecked a car.
Yeah.
You'd have been like, yeah, go parasailing, but then not doing your preparation.
Yeah,
like,
see, I think, like, I wouldn't have, like, killed somebody, but it would have been like, is this
negligence.
Your fault? Is this your fault?
Yeah.
And then they decide ultimately, nope, it's not.
It would have been a manslaughter thing, and then you get, like, community service.
Yeah.
For 1 hour.
Yeah.
And you have to clean your boat for 1 hour.
Yeah. How's this going to affect your streetwear brand?
Yeah.
The 1983 Paris Dakar rally featured yet another celebrity debut, French singer Daniel Balavoine. Well, he took on his first Paris Dakar driving a Datsun. Balavoine became a star when he was cast in the role of Johnny Rockford in the musical Starmania, a dark rock opera that takes place in a dystopic future. While unfamiliar to many English-speaking audiences, the musical is huge in France. That same year, with two races under his belt, the duo of Jackie Ickx and Claude Brasseur won their first Paris-Dakar in the truck class, driving a Mercedes G-Wagon, baby. Hubert Auriol won his first Paris-Dakar riding a motorcycle built by BMW. These victories were made all the more impressive by the massive sandstorm that hit the race during a stage in by a massive sandstorm that hit the race during the stage in the Dinere Desert. The chaos caused 40 competitors to become lost. Some had to spend as many as 4 days getting back to the main route, which is still 2 days less than Mark Thatcher. While this seems like another badass phenomenon to add to the Paris Dakar's mystique, this event would prove to be a tragic foreshadowing of the 1986 race.
The 1986 Paris Dakar rally was again hit with ferocious sandstorms. These were so bad that their usual safety air support was grounded. As the race went on, numerous competitors got stuck due to accidents caused by the blinding sand. Even worse, one motorcyclist was knocked unconscious and had to be carried to base camp, while another crash sent a rider into a coma and eventually his death. On the evening of January 14th, Terry Sabine took to the skies by helicopter to search for stranded vehicles. He felt a responsibility to the racers and had previously said in an interview, quote,
10 minutes before they leave, the competitors don't know where they are going, but they know I will be there if they get into a mess. There is a complicity between them and me. Some of them even call me God, and I like that.
That really went off the rails.
Yeah, whoa. I mean, it started out kind of like, okay, all right.
Yeah, he's trying to help people.
Okay.
And oh, he like, thinks what? He's God.
Terry was joined by two pilots, a French newspaper correspondent, and French singer / previous race participant, the aforementioned Daniel Balavoine. Flying low to spot stuck vehicles, eventually high winds crashed the aircraft into a large sand dune, one that was nearly impossible to see in the darkness of night.
Mm.
The crash killed all five on board, including Terry Sabine, the man the French press had nicknamed the Megalomaniac of the Sands.
Oh, God.
That's a cool nickname.
Why?
They call me God, and I like that.
French actor and Jackie Ickx's co-champion Claude Brasseur said of the founder's death, quote,
Sabine was not just simply the head of the rally or the director of the race. He was someone whom one day you detested and the next you adored.
He also repeated a common criticism.
Sabine made the race too difficult, not just for others, but for himself as well. Sounds like Zach Redpath, director of High Low and some of our other videos. For some reason, just makes it really hard to do. You guys are sleeping on a cliff. What? Why? I don't know. Is it going to be in the video? No.
Probably not.
No. But you got to sleep on this rock.
There might be a 3-second shot of it.
I need a 3-second shot of you guys sleeping on this rock. So you got to sleep on this rock for the next
really
8 days.
Time lapse. So yeah. We need to sleep. Yeah. You need to sleep there all night.
Officials did not stop the race after the crash, believing this to be what Terry would have wanted. But they did cancel the stage the next day to add a day of rest to a race that normally only has one. In the aftermath, Terry's dad, Gilbert, took over as director of the Paris-Dakar rally. To make the crash even more tragic, Balavoine, the French singer, had used his fame and participation in the Paris rally to bring attention to the plight of the impoverished areas in Sahara that lacked modern water pumps. He was only visiting the 1986 Paris-Dakar to assist in the delivery and installation of these water pumps. Family and friends of Daniel Balavoine set up the Association Daniel Balavoine to install those water pumps in the Western Sahara. And these days, their mission has broadened to helping in the areas of education and food self-sufficiency.
Nice. I like that.
Pretty awesome.
Hell yeah, Balavoine.
Terry's ashes were scattered by the Lost Tree, an acacia tree in the Tenere Desert, said to be among the most isolated in the world, with no other trees in the radius of hundreds of miles.
Nice.
That's crazy that's there. Today, the tree is also known as Terry Sabine Tree and memorializes Sabine with a bronze plaque, just as he probably would have wanted.
Of course you'd want that. That's like some pretty appropriate.
Hey, this tree that's probably been here for hundreds of years, it's actually my
Let's
tree.
Call it General Sherman.
This guy died doing a hobby out here, so.
And he was also kind of a jerk.
Yeah. This is his.
That's I can't get over that quote, man. Some of them call me God.
And I like it. That's crazy. I like it.
Drink my blood.
And I like that. He said that. Yeah.
Drink my blood.
We'll get back to more Pass Gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
To address a gradual decline in people willing to risk it all for a race, the Paris-Dakar Rally was going to reimagine its route. In 1992, the race ran the length of the African continent and finished on the beaches of Cape Town, South Africa. There's a lot going on in 1992 in South Africa.
Mm.
In another first, GPS devices were also allowed.
That's something I didn't think of, but yeah, that would help so much.
Oh, yeah. So much help. Why haven't we been doing this all along? There was another massive change in 1992. Hubert Auriol, 2-time motorcycle champion, would no longer compete on a bike due to a series of injuries. With age comes cage.
So this is crazy. In 86, he crashed and dislocated his shoulder. Then the next year, while racing Cyril, Auriol crashed and broke both of his ankles.
Ow.
Ow.
Despite this, he still managed.
That was right.
Yeah.
Ow.
I can see that. You know, both pedals just like...
Well, despite breaking his ankles, he managed to get on his bike. He completed the stage and was in so much pain that he collapsed at the finish line and had to have his boots cut off of him because he couldn't do it.
Boots, please spare my boots.
That's insane.
Boot cutter.
Boot cutter.
So in 1992, because of those injuries, he decided to make the leap to driving cars and join the Mitsubishi team.
Good decision.
Worst teams to join. That's a good one. In doing so, he became the first person to win Dakar on 2 wheels and on 4 wheels. By 1995, the name Auriol was practically synonymous with Paris-Dakar and became director of the race until 2004. Wow.
I'm thinking maybe I do 5 wheels next year.
Maybe I do 5, 6, 7, 8, sky's the limit. Maybe you call me God now.
The 1990s also featured the emergence of 2 new Paris-Dakar legends. Jutta Kleinschmidt and Stefan Pieterhansel. Jutta Kleinschmidt first competed in 1988 on a motorcycle before switching to a car in 1994. In 1997, the year Titanic came out and Biggie Smalls died, she became the first woman to win a stage, and in 2001, never forget, Yuta became the first and to date only woman to win the Paris-Dakar.
Wow.
That's cool.
Frenchman Stefan Peter Hansel made his debut also at the 1988 Paris-Dakar, riding for Yamaha at the tender age of 22. And what a tender age it was. Hey, little Stefan, is your daddy home? 3 short years later, Peter Hansel would begin his reign as the most dominant racer in the history of Paris-Dakar. In 1991, riding a Yamaha YZE750T, Peter Hansel won his first of 6 titles in 8 years.
Wow.
After conquering motorcycles, he switched to the car class in 1999, the year of Woodstock 99. 5 years later, he joined Hubert.
You were correct.
Yeah, man. I'm freaking killing it with these contexts, historical context.
It's coming like rapid fire.
It's like, hey, you might not know that this was happening, but this, to put it into context for you, here's what else was happening in the world.
An event with the year in the name.
Hey, that was the only one. The rest of them were real. That's not my fault. That's what it was called. Woodstock 99. Relevant. 5 years later, he joined Hubert Auriol as one of 2 competitors to win the race on both 2 and 4 wheels.
Wow.
Peter Hansel would rack up more victories, records, and superlatives just as Paris-Dakar was entering a period of change.
Uh-huh.
Drink my blood.
Drink my blood, Falker. I'm Grimace.
In 2008, the first and to date only time in the race's history, Paris-Dakar was canceled.
Oh.
What was going on in 2008?
Yeah, Paris-Dakar, why'd you get canceled?
In the days leading up to the race, 4 French tourists were murdered in Mauritania by Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists. This, plus direct threats against the race by terrorist groups, caused the cancellation and led to an entirely new location for what was becoming known as the Dakar.
Do you want to know a fun fact about Mauritania?
Sure. Yeah.
That's where the word Moors comes from. You know, the Moors.
Oh.
The Moors in Spain.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like Othello.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Ooh.
Interesting. You learn something every day on here on Pass Gas, so make sure you hit that subscribe button. Okay, so the new setting for this race was across the Atlantic Ocean. That's right. We're going to the New World, baby. From 2009 to 2019, the Dakar was actually held in South America.
I did not know this.
Yeah, where competitors traded the threat of heat exhaustion in the desert for the dangers of altitude sickness in the Andes Mountains, Joe.
Which would you rather?
I'd rather be in the mountains.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd do terribly up at high altitude.
Why? Because you smoke?
No, I just like get really bad headaches.
Oh.
Yeah. I
bought you oxygen
altitude.
Last time we were at altitude.
Really?
You did.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was marginal.
It was kind of a novelty.
Yeah.
It was a novelty oxygen.
It was cool, though. I felt, yeah. It was, like, flavored, too.
I think it was bubblegum, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Ew.
It was like sex on the beach. I don't know. It's like, where'd you find this?
Kind of store did you buy that from? Well,
we were in Colorado,
yeah.
And we were driving through, like, a lot of mountains. And yeah. Some of the trailheads, a lot of the, like, the gas stations and stuff in the area would sell just, like, cans of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they had flavors.
Yeah.
I got mint. I got Nolan bubblegum.
So anyway, they're in the Andes. Throughout this period, Stefan Peter Hansel continued his utter domination. He won 4 times, twice driving for Mini and twice driving for Peugeot.
Peugeot.
But you can take the Dakar out of the desert, but you can't keep Dakar out of the desert for too long, okay?
Uh-huh.
Beginning in 2020, the rally moved to Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2021, to cap off his amazing career, Peter Hansel, driving for Mini, won his 14th Dakar title and his 8th in the car class. And in the process, he became the only competitor to have won the Dakar on 3 continents, Africa, South America, and with Saudi Arabia in Asia.
That's cool. I think a Mini would be really fun to do the Dakar rally in.
The Dakar Minis.
Well, they're like really these cool. Huge monsters, basically. You should check it out.
Mini monsters?
Yeah, check out Mini Dakar car. They're like these.
They're like really famous.
I mean, it was like a Countryman or a Clubman or something?
Clubman.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Clubman with like off. You know, it looks
still
like
small.
A short trophy truck, basically, with a mini body on top. But it's pretty dope.
It would
they
be
all-wheel drive, I assume.
Or
listening to Oasis while you're driving in Saudi Arabia.
They're sick.
From 182 competitors in the initial running, Dakar boasted over 1,000 competitors for its 2023 running in Saudi Arabia. In its current iteration, the rally has between 10 to 15 stages and is generally between 4,000 to 5,000 miles in length.
Jeez.
From its initial two classes of car and motorcycle, Dakar now offers five main categories: motorcycles, motorcycles with four wheels, cars, trucks, quads, and side-by-sides.
Those things are nuts.
You don't like side-by-sides?
No.
Why?
Because nobody who doesn't have one likes them. They tear up the trail.
Mm.
Off-road guys don't like side-by-sides.
I think they're kind of cool.
They're fun. It's like a roller coaster that you drive.
They're fun, but they tear up the trail, and everyone has one, and they rip all over, and they're just generally, they got a bad rep for being rude.
I mean, if you're in the desert, though, well, no one's going to be like, my sand moved.
Yeah, I see what James is saying. Like, in America, it's like, traditionally, like, people who go off-roading, you have to, like, build your Jeep out. Yeah. You have to, like, outfit
side-by-side's
it.
Like a...
It's kind of, it's like, it's, more, it's a good dedication kind of thing. Like, right, you make your rig. But yeah, then these side-by-sides are a lot cheaper to make or, like, buy.
Yeah.
And they're incredibly capable. So you can just, like, buy your way into the scene. And, I get
and
why
you
people
don't slowly get into the scene where, like, you learn the etiquette of it. So, like, you just have side-by-side people just, like, ripping all over the place, being dangerous.
It's kind of like it's like the off-road version of, like, buying a boat.
You know? Right, yeah. You it's just kind of like yokels. It's like you're kind of ruining this.
It's like Tesla Model 3 owners.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they also make the trail, like...
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Okay, I take back my endorsement.
No, they're fun, though.
But
don't apologize. They're fun.
Oh, come on. Now you're switching them up. Come on.
Their fun is off. Just you should learn the rules of the road or the off-road. Each vehicle can have 1 to 3 participants, not including support crew. Despite all the technological advancements that have come in the past 4 decades, Dakar still is imbued with its spirit of man versus nature. Vehicles now have GPS, and the specific route is given to the competitors in the form of a digital roadbook just 15 minutes before the beginning of a stage. That's sick.
That's
pretty cool.
Racers must follow the laid-out course, despite the fact that wind and sand can lay waste to the markings organizers have set up, and they must get within 10 meters of waypoints in order to digitally validate that they're staying true to the course, or they face penalties. That's sick.
That's pretty cool how they do it.
Also, in the vein of keeping the Dakar closest to Sabine's initial vision, there's the Malamoto class, now called the original Bimotul class.
Okay.
This is a motorcycle class in which riders must maintain and repair their own machinery without the help of a factory team. It's also incumbent on the riders to carry their own food and tent with them. It's simultaneously the most difficult and most affordable class to compete in.
Did Carlos Sainz Sr. ever do Dakar?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could talk about it. He actually got injured this year racing in it. His car went, like, kind of almost endoed going over a jump, and it, like, broke a vertebra in his back.
Jeez, he domed himself. Fuck, that's crazy.
I actually watched a lot of Dakar this week. Sorry, this year, because they had highlights online. And it's just, it's so cool. Like, depending on what time you start, how the course changes. Because, like, you kind of want to be hang back a little bit from the start. Because the people that start on the dunes have no direction of where to go. But after a few cars go by, the course starts to kind of, like, bead in to the dunes. And pack in as well, like the sand.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat. Keep up with the race, guys. Because, like, they make it easy to watch the highlights, and it's very cool just to watch these things. There's so many different classes, so many different kinds of cars. There's like a Dakar classic class where people race stuff from the 70s and 80s and 90s in the vintage.
That.
Like,
sick.
It's so cool, man.
Well, it's not all rosy, Nolan.
No, it's
there
not, Joe.
There are some criticisms.
That's right. The Dakar has been criticized for a variety of reasons, Joe. The most common being how dangerous it is and the sheer number of deaths. Since its inception, 32 competitors have died as a result of the Dakar. Most deaths in Dakar are a result of accidents and collisions, obviously, be it with other vehicles or spectators. However, in 1991, Charles Cabain, a French driver of the support truck from the Citroën team, he was shot, with his death being attributed to the ongoing conflict between Tuareg rebels and the Malian military. In 1996, Laurent Guillen, a support truck driver for Citroën, was killed as a result of an intra-country conflict. Drivers were warned to stay close to the main route because of old landmines planted during a conflict between the Moroccan army and the Polisario Front rebels. Laurent Guillen's truck was off the main route when it hit a landmine, killing him instantly. That's a bad way to
that's
go,
a bummer,
dude.
Yeah.
Of course, participants in the Dakar knowingly entered into a dangerous situation. But, you're going through all these countries and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to keep, like, your kind of invincible racer kind of mindset. You got to leave that at the door because you're you're not in your country. You're going through a place you don't know.
Bye.
In addition to the competitors' deaths, there have been an astounding 46 deaths of spectators or officials. 1988 provided a particularly horrific example. A 10-year-old Malian girl was killed by a driver while crossing the road, and a Mauritanian mother and child were killed when a media vehicle crashed into a group of bystanders.
Yeesh.
Yeesh.
Aside from high-end business, many of the communities that the race goes through claim to have seen little benefit from the race. And the costs of poor air quality from dust kickup, yet alone innocent deaths, make for a complicated relationship. It doesn't help that the natural beauty that often makes for the best aesthetic landscape is also among the Earth's most fragile and the least prepared for hundreds of vehicles driving over it at high speed. When the race took place in South America, Chilean archaeologists, environmental activists, and indigenous groups tried unsuccessfully to block it from occurring. This effort was in part due to a 2011 study done by the Chilean government that showed nearly half of the country's ancient sites had been damaged by some capacity from the race.
That's messed up.
That's not cool at all. And now that the race has seemingly found a new home in Saudi Arabia, criticism is largely centered on Saudi Arabia's poor record on human rights and subsequent attempts at sports washing.
That's the thing with Saudi Arabia is, like, they got a lot of money, so they're bringing a lot of attention and sports and stuff to them.
They want to become the entertainment, like, center of the world. That's kind of their
plan. Vegas of the Middle East.
Yes. So that's why they're investing, with the PGA, the FIA. They have a large investment in McLaren, the F1 team. Mm. Paris Dakar Rally, obviously. They got, who's the soccer player they hired?
They were going to get Messi, but Messi
Not
signed
Messi,
to Miami.
Ronaldo. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Ronaldo's over there playing for them. They're spending billions of dollars to try to clean their image by making everyone just watch the sports that they produce now, basically. All right, so stunning, deadly, and unable to be killed itself, Dakar continues, having held its 45th edition in 2023. The gorgeous vistas of remote locations as the stage for a man versus nature battle royale continue to call competitors and fans alike. The modernization of the race continues to serve Terry Sabine's dual mandate of, quote,
a challenge for those who go, a dream for those who stay behind.
For those who stay behind, the dream is more accessible than ever, with more media coverage of the entire event available on cable and streaming services every year. As for those who go, the race may have left Africa, but the spirit of Dakar perseveres in both its name and its punishing, hellish terrain that still manages to push the needle of human endurance well into the red.
I want to do Dakar. Not really.
I want to push my life up into that rev limiter.
I got to put it. I push the needle. That's the rev limiter that I'm bouncing off of constantly.
Oh, that's okay. Sick.
We finally did it, and I was not disappointed. What a fun story, and it's as cool as I thought it would be. We got listener mail. Hi, guys. My name is Porter, but my friends call me Clay.
All right, Clay.
Okay. I'm from Michigan, and I just wanted to say that I am a huge fan. I've listened to almost every episode of Past Guest, starting from June of last year. I'm a freshman in high school, and I have hyper-fixated on cars since I was 4. I was hoping to ask if you guys could do an episode on the story of Don the Snake Prudhomme and Tom the Mongoose McEwen.
We did
have,
that.
Dude. We have, dude.
Go back. Before June of last year, we did a lot of...
Keep scrolling on your podcast app. Yeah, it's there. We did it.
But thank you for being a fan, though.
Thanks for being a fan. And honestly, that's good news, because now you can just go listen to it. Mm-hmm. East 11 Horsepower Porter. P.S. Nice. Michigan declares war on the Wink Wink Nation.
Uh-oh.
You just snuck that in there postscript.
Wow.
Are you going to stand for that?
I don't have beef with Michigan, okay?
Oh, now you do.
Porter is...
We could be stronger together, and we could fight Minnesota, but you playing.
Yeah, well, speaking of Wink Wink Nation, just a reminder, we've got new Wink Wink Nation shirts, which are very cool. We've got the poster with the same design for the Wink Wink Nation. We've got little Wink Wink Nation stickers and a bunch of stickers, merchandise that you can buy. It's awesome. Go check it out at donutmedia.com. Make sure you get yourself some sun.
And we'll see you guys next week with another bonkers recounting of automotive history. Follow me at James Pumphrey on all social media. Follow Nolan at Nolan J. Sykes.
Thank
follow
you.
Joe at Joe G. Weber on Threads.
Sure. And Clay Threads. Or Potter or whatever your name is.
Porter.
You unfollow me.
Yeah, unfollow Joe Porter, but double follow me. That would be an unfollow.
See you next time.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.